Hello. As you know, Arthur is about to begin his fourth season of the Emerins podcast. I'm sure you're as thrilled as I am. Yay.
Kia ora and welcome to the fourth season of the Emerins podcast. This is episode 209 for Wednesday, March 31, 2010. You know, in the 3 years now that I've been doing this podcast, there have been times when I've recorded an episode and not used it for whatever reason, either because I don't like it or because I don't get around to posting it fast enough. The other day I was clearing my Eterol digital recorder so that Nigel could borrow it, and on there was a car cast I did about 2 years ago that I never used. And so this isn't unusual for me, and it's not unusual then that I've already had my first unused episode, which I did yesterday. And the reason it was unused, there's nothing wrong with it. There wasn't anything I was going to undo or whatever. It's just that there was some breaking news at the end of the day, and I thought about just tacking it on at the end, but I thought, bugger, I'm going to make it a subject in itself. And that is, apparently, there's a store here in Auckland that sells American products. I mean, things you can't normally get in New Zealand, such as tinned pumpkin. I'm serious. Apparently they sell that. You can also get various kinds of American clothing there. I'm not going to go into what because I don't need to embarrass myself any more than I already have. Except that I will say this. In New Zealand, you generally can't get multi-packs of socks. You know, I just get ordinary socks, nothing fancy, nothing elaborate. And you just can't get multi-pairs here. You normally have to get, at least now that I've seen, you normally have to get them in ones, you know, single pairs, maybe two. And so, you know, I'm sort of interested in this place. So Nigel and I are planning on going and checking it out on over the weekend, or maybe tomorrow, Thursday. because this is a holiday weekend. And Nigel is taking tomorrow, Thursday, off, so that he'll be off from Thursday until Tuesday. He goes back to work Tuesday, because Friday and Monday are public holidays in New Zealand. It's a four-day weekend. And, of course, Friday and Sunday are two of the days in which there's a total trading ban, which means that most places are supposed to be closed. So Nigel's mom is coming up today, and she's staying with us through the weekend. And there's not a whole lot we can do on Friday because everything's closed, and also Sunday, although that's not a big drama. So we're going to stock up on things so that we have food and alcohol, because we won't be able to go out and buy that on Friday. Not that there's ever much danger of running out. It's not like I'm that much of a wino, contrary to popular belief. But back to this American thing. I also tweeted, I believe, or something, about the imminent arrival in New Zealand of Doritos. Now, Doritos have never been available in New Zealand, except at a different American store, which is now defunct. And what's happening, though, is that they're not importing Doritos. They're going to be making them here. And the company that's making them already has two brands of corn chips on the market, one called CC's and another called Aztec. They're both being discontinued and replaced with Doritos. Now, they say that they're going to be able to take advantage of global marketing. I'm thinking, what global marketing? We don't see it here. But then I thought about it. There's product placement in American shows, American movies, and so on. And that's probably really what they mean. And so they will get some advantage from that, I suppose. And they also will get some economies because they're going to be replacing two brands with one. So they're only going to have to deal with manufacturing and marketing one brand. So they will have savings at the very least. And I read an article that said that they had done focus group testing on the best flavors to use in New Zealand. So I have no idea if they're going to end up being the same flavors as in the U.S. or what the story is. But I will report on this as developments happen. Well, of course, the last episode was just a short little brief one to announce the winner of the anniversary contest. And thank you again, everyone who entered. I found it a lot of fun. I hope that you all did, too. One thing I would have done differently, if I had it to do over again, is that I would have asked a full 20 questions and not made people rely on the two bonus questions in order to be able to enter four times. Several people did enter four times. There was only a couple that I can think of off the top of my head who entered only once. So obviously the strategy of having multiple questions and multiple permitted entries was a good one. And if I do a contest again, I may do that. But I'll tell you where it came from now. About a year ago-ish, the breakfast program on TVNZ had a promotion for Las Vegas, of all things. And they would have a little segment about Las Vegas. They would ask a question. And then at the end of the program, they would, later on in the program anyway, they would repeat the question. And they wouldn't tell you what the answer was, but they, not directly, but they would rephrase it in such a way that you would know the answer if you hadn't seen the segment. Well, of course, this is broadcast television, and unless people recorded it, they wouldn't necessarily go back and be able to find out what the question was, which is quite different from a podcast, obviously, where you can listen to it as many times as you want. So I just adapted it, and I wanted it to be something that was relatively easy to enter. I didn't want to have to make people go out and scrounge around and dig up information, although I could have. I basically wanted to use it as a vehicle to talk about little subjects that I otherwise wouldn't have been able to, or wouldn't have bothered to, maybe. And I think it did that. And it was a bit of fun, a bit of trivia, some fun things, some serious things, all sort of mixed together. And as I said, little topics I otherwise probably wouldn't have talked about. So I thought it was a lot of fun, and I may do it again at some stage, although not for quite a while. That was, of course, a relatively big project, doing that whole anniversary thing. Not the competition so much, although at the end it was a big deal, but the fact that I had decided I was going to try to podcast every day last week. Well, it turns out that that's not as easy as you might think, especially if you're not used to it. So it ended up being quite a lot of work, and now I'm shifting onto my next two projects, one of which was work. This is the busiest time of the month for me, and because of the public holiday, I'm losing, basically two full work days, but, the whole weekend. So I'm a bit under the gun with that, and next week may be busy. But also the Pride 48 podcasting marathon. It's going along just swimmingly. We have roughly 10 more participants so far than we had last year. And of course, the recruitment phase isn't done yet. And it all looks really quite good. Now, I don't believe I talked about that on this podcast, but originally, Daniel Brewer, who was the driving force last year, suggested that I become the public face of Pride 48 and do recruitment and stuff. I thought, okay, fine, that's not a problem. And then he sent an email out to everyone saying that I was this year's host, sort of like the host of the Oscars, and that I was also going to be doing public relations, and I was going to be hosting the kickoff show and the rap show. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, you didn't mention any of that. So apparently I'm actually the host of this year's Pride 48, and I will be on the kickoff show, which I believe is at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Friday, the 25th of June, which is sometime Saturday here in New Zealand. And I don't know what it is yet, and I'll get to why in a minute. and I'll be doing my own show, and I'll probably be popping up in various parts during the event when people want other people to join them over Skype or whatever. And of course, the wrap-up show on Sunday at roughly the same time. Sunday Eastern Daylight Time again. And I will put on the website what the relevant times are in New Zealand time as well, because I do have listeners in New Zealand, contrary to popular belief. and eventually I'm sure that there will be a schedule on the Pride 48 site that will make it easy for anybody who wants to go find out. But I hope that you'll take in the at least some of the Pride 48 marathon, because it does seem like it's going to be a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun last year, and we've got some new people, actually literally new people. Some of the podcasters taking part have only been podcasting for a relatively short time. They only have a few episodes out. So it's a good opportunity to find out about some people you may not have heard about before, and some of them might be right up your alley. Or not. I don't know. But there'll be variety, that's for sure. So I'm quite looking forward to that, but there is quite a lot going on with that. Now, sort of moving into the update territory, I have an update on something that I've mentioned before. I talked about how there is this university conference thing for GLBT university students that was going to be held in Christchurch in July. Well, I've now gotten an email saying that it's July 2nd and 3rd. And although I still don't have the details formalized yet, and I don't actually have a formal presentation, workshop, or whatever set up at this point, it looks like I will be going to Christchurch during that weekend. Probably Nigel will join me. And if that happens, I hope to set up some sort of a I don't know, an opportunity for meet and greet, because I do have listeners in the general Christchurch area. So it would be nice to be able to meet up with folks. But I'll report on that more when I have more details. Also in the news, but in the update category, I, of course, have talked about the Destiny Church and all of its problems. Well, they have more problems. One of their peoples was in this foundation, I guess it was, which was placing children in foster care, and they were steering the children, if for lack of a better word, into the homes of church members. And the idea behind it was an opportunity for them to, well, I'm sorry, for lack of a better word, to brainwash these children young. You know, it's the old saying, get them while they're young. And it's essentially what they were doing. Well, it turns out now that I believe it's the son of one of these Destiny preachers, one of the churches in, I think it was Taranaki, I can't remember. Anyway, was molesting children, and or allegedly, I should say, molesting children, because the trial hasn't happened yet. And so now, finally, the government is looking into the relationship between the children, young persons and their families, or whatever it's called, service, and the church, and whether or not it's appropriate for somebody connected with the church to be placing children when they steer them deliberately toward church members. All of which, this goes on unrelenting bad publicity for the church about its finances, about the way it does things. There's continued to be a bit of pushback from people who say, look, this is common, apart from the molestation necessarily, this is common practice among Pentecostal churches where they relentlessly push people to tithe contributions to the church, and where the pastors live in the lap of luxury and they're rich and they drive fancy cars and all that sort of stuff, that this isn't unusual. And it's also been pointed out that among Polynesian Pacific Islander people in particular, the need to give ever more money that you don't have to the church is cultural. And all of that is true. And I'm not entirely sure why all of a sudden the media is picking on the church. Not that they don't deserve it, but it does seem to come out of left field. But it's one of those things where once they start digging, they find more and more and more. And I stand by what I said before, my prediction, and that's that their leader, Brian Tomaki, will, I believe, leave New Zealand probably in less than a year, and I believe he will move to Queensland in Australia. That's my prediction. We'll see if I end up being right about that. But certainly in a year, probably less, maybe even 6 months if the heat continues, because he'll just have enough and he'll leave. And I'm chuckling because I'm reminded of the old saying. It has been attributed to David Lange. It's been attributed to Robert Muldoon, both now dead former prime ministers of two vastly different parties. But apparently it originated with a New Zealand comic cartoonist who got it from somewhere else, which says that he can leave and raise the average intelligence of both countries. It's an ongoing joke we have here, but the Australians don't like that one too much. And understandably, they don't like to be shown up. So those are just some updates in the news. Now, long-term listeners may remember that I did an episode when George Carlin died, where I attempted to use all of the banned words, the ones you're not allowed to say in the FCC. And it wasn't as easy as you would think. It was pointed out to me today by a certain famous podcaster, who's also a listener of mine, that in a recent episode I used the word twat. And I don't remember using the word, but that's not unusual, because I often don't remember what I say in podcasts. But as I've said before, New Zealanders are potty mouths. They tend to swear with fairly reckless abandon. There are, of course, people who don't. You know, they're always pristine and always say the right things without even a taint of impropriety. But that's not true of most of us. Most of us do swear, and quite a bit. Now, back in January, I blogged about a Broadcast Standards Authority decision about the use of the word fuck in a program that had been broadcast. And not that you'll probably know it, but the program was called Amazon with Bruce Perry, and it was on Prime TV about 6 months earlier. And I just thought it was hilarious because in order to talk about what they were talking about in the decision, they had to use the word fuck repeatedly. And it was the first time I could remember ever having seen that in a government report. Well, I can top that. I haven't had a chance to blog about this yet, and I'm sure I eventually will. But the Broadcast Standards Authority recently released a report called What Not to Swear, and it's about the words that are objectionable in broadcast in New Zealand. Now, here's a little background first. The Broadcast Standards Authority administers the Broadcasting Act, and among other things, it has to ensure decency, it has to ensure fairness and balance, and all those kinds of things, appropriateness. It has to look out for the interests of children. And a lot of what's appropriate and what's permissible depends on the time of day. When children are likely or possibly watching something, you can't say some things, but after 8:30, when it gets into adults-only time, then you can get away with more, like in a TV drama, for instance. So these are all based on community standards, which obviously shift over time. I mean, the word bloody and bugger used to be considered swear words, and they're not anymore and haven't been for a long time. So from time to time, they check, roughly every 5 years, they check to see, you know, sort of take the pulse of the community to find out what they think, what New Zealanders think is acceptable and what's not. So they released this report, What Not to Swear, which was based on research from AC Nielsen to find out what people thought was acceptable, broadcast in a drama after 8:30 p.m., so this is something that was intended for adults. It was in adults' time when children are supposed to be in bed. And I thought the results were actually quite fascinating. Now, the number one word which was inappropriate to be broadcast is the word cunt, with 74% of New Zealanders thinking that was never acceptable. The second one was nigger at 66%, which is interesting in itself because it doesn't have quite the same context in New Zealand as it does in the U.S., it can be used to mean anybody who's not a white person, although obviously it has the American overtones as well. But it has in the past sometimes been applied by racists to Māori, for instance. And then the next words are all, well, not all of them, but many of them are related. Number three was motherfucker at 66. Number four was Jesus fucking Christ at 65. Cocksucker was 60%. Thought it was inappropriate. Get fucked was 55%. Fuck off was 52%. Fuck was 51%, which means that essentially variations on the same word are generally thought of as not being appropriate to broadcast. And one of the new entrants to the word, get fucked was actually a new entrance. So was Jesus fucking Christ and fuck off. A lot of these hadn't been surveyed specifically before, so it's interesting that they would end up in the top 10. But the next word, let's see, oops, they're not numbered, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, at ninth place, was faggot. Now, I mean, that I think is a good thing, that people think that's objectionable, except that only 46% of New Zealanders thought that it was objectionable to use that word in broadcast television. Now, in the context of drama, I don't have quite so much problem with it, because it can be appropriate for the character, that sort of thing. I have much more of a problem with it when it's used in a reality program, because then it becomes a hurtful weapon rather than appropriate for the character. And that's actually true for a lot of these words as far as I'm concerned. Context is everything. The 10th word was cock, which is also at 46%. And I find that fascinating, the words that people find the most objectionable. And then I might as well read you the rest of the list. And this is number 11. I'll read you just tell you what the word is and the percentage. It was retard, 44%, slut, 40%, whore, 40%, wanker, 37%, asshole, 35%, which remember is spelled differently in New Zealand, Jesus Christ, 31%, dick, 30%. Now, why would they think that dick is more acceptable than cock? Anyway, Jesus, 27%, piss, 26%, and I don't know what the context is. I don't know if they mean that as alcohol or urine. Bitch, 26%, God, 24%, piss off, 24%, bastard, 23%, shit, 22%, balls, 21%, bullshit, 17%, crap, 14%, bollocks, 12%, bloody, 12%, and bugger, 11%. So obviously, of all of those words, 11% bugger is the most acceptable of the formerly naughty words. And they point out that that's among the words that's significantly lower than in 2005. And this has come up repeatedly, the word bugger, because there was a Toyota commercial that was the only, I think the only word that they actually spoke in the whole commercial was bugger over and over and over again. And some people say, oh, hey, we can't have this swearing on our TV. Oh, it's just terrible. It's terrible. It's terrible. Well, the Broadcast Standards Authority said, nah, it's not a swear word anymore. And apparently they're right. It's backed up with the research. And the whole point of that research, of course, is just to make sure that they are administering actual community standards and not just what they think are community standards. So that's actually quite a good thing. I am now going to switch to comments. And first, I wanted to share with you a bit of an email I got from Tom the Ramble Redhead, which I just thought was hilarious. He said, I'm way behind on so many podcasts, so I'm getting caught up on yours today. And he says, to recap on previous shows, happy birthday, happy anniversary. Oh, how sweet, Nigel, taking the day off for your birthday to surprise you. Interesting take on the KFC story and how each country can take the same commercial in different ways. And he's added to that since then, but I just thought that was funny. And I have one written comment, which was on, 206. And it's from Roger Green, who says, I'm waiting for it to load, who says, the UK Prime Minister's questions air live Wednesday mornings at 7 a.m. Eastern Time on C-SPAN 2 and re-airs on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on C-SPAN. And he has a link about that in his comment. And the show box plays in the U.S. The first part first. I had wondered in that episode when UK Question Time aired in the U.S. And so thank you for that, Roger. That's very good to know. And the Australian one will be on C-SPAN at some stage. The Australian thing I now remember is called APAC, A-PAC, for Australian Public Affairs Channel. And they've got some sort of deal with C-SPAN where they're going to be showing certain congressional features on their channel, and C-SPAN will pick up things from the Australian Federal Parliament. And maybe, I believe, some of the state parliaments as well. I'm not positive about that part. At any rate, what's interesting is that these parliaments are very different from one another. I mean, I talked a bit about the Australian one, and the speaker always going, order, which we don't have in New Zealand. Ours is a bit raucous with people shouting at each other back across the floor, which is a bit like the UK's. Except that in our parliament, you'll never hear the members going, hear, hear. It just doesn't happen. And Canada's a bit different again. And if you do get the opportunity to see some of these question times in particular in action, it's really worth doing. Now, in most countries, and especially in New Zealand, but probably all the others as well, question time is basically an orchestrated circus. It is an opportunity for both sides to score points. So in the New Zealand parliament, for instance, during question time, the government may have one of its own members of parliament ask a question that would go something like this. It might say, to the Prime Minister, has he seen any reports indicating that the national-led government is the best government in the history of the world? And then he'll have a chance to do all this puffery. Whereas the opposition might say, to the Prime Minister, has he seen any reports indicating that the national-led government is the worst in the history of the world? And then the Prime Minister gets the chance to refute that. The primary questions are always submitted in advance in writing so that the relevant minister has the opportunity to provide an answer to Parliament. Because the theory behind this is that Parliament is holding the ministers accountable by forcing them to answer questions about what they're doing. In practice, it does end up to be a bit of this orchestrated circus and performance art, in a sense. But occasionally, something really unexpected will come through where the government of the day is forced to admit something that they didn't want to admit, or accidentally says something that they didn't mean to say, those sorts of things. And that is kind of what makes it interesting. And also, in the case of the New Zealand Parliament, you kind of wait for somebody to be told that they have to withdraw and apologize for something they've said, or forced to leave the chamber or what have you. So there can always be these little petty dramas going on. It's a bit like a political soap opera in some ways. But it is worth checking out to see how other governments do things if you do get the chance. So thanks for that link, Roger. And everyone, if you do get the opportunity, do check out A Question Time near you. He also mentions the Showbox plays in the U.S. Well, first of all, I screwed that up. It's actually called The Shoebox, and I had a typo, which I've been having a lot of lately for some reason. That is a short film that was done by this guy, Chaz Harris, who won the Blog Idol competition on the Stuff news website in New Zealand. And what Roger's referring to is that if you go to my blog and click on the link, you can watch the short film on your computer over the internet in the U.S. A lot of things that air on the internet here in New Zealand are not available in the U.S. However, that one is. So those are just a few bits and pieces I wanted to tell you about today. I wanted to update you on some things that are going on. Also to let you know that I will probably be in Radio's Islands until sometime next week because of the holiday weekend. I'll be working this week. Some of this weekend, I mean. But mostly I'll be trying to enjoy myself. And next week I've got a lot of work to do, and I don't know if I'm going to have a chance to record anything during the week, but at this point I'm expecting to do my live show at the end of the week. Of course, Archer is scheduled to do a live show this week, which is Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and I will not. It's highly improbable I will be able to join that show because I'll be busy with family. So there. One last thing before I go. A couple episodes back, I mentioned that Holly was doing her walk for animals, and I've checked, and she's now up to 15% of her goal. I see some Amarin's podcast listeners listed among the contributors. I would love to see plenty more. I'll put a link again in these show notes. Please go and consider sponsoring Holly in her walk. You will do a lot of good for the animals. But that's it for today. That's it for this week. I'll be back sometime next week. Have a great holiday weekend, everyone. Well, I will anyway. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amarin's Podcast at amarinspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amarinspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.